Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a PhD degree in public policy, MA degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
Welcome to the show this morning. This is Dr. John Coben, your Tyranny Response Unit on the Tyranny Response Network. Again, still working through some of our technical issues, and sorry we're getting a slightly late start this morning. You can reach me at 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. That's the phone number to call in with your questions and comments. You can also send us an email to questions at policyofliberty.net. That's questions at policyofliberty.net. And today is one of those days where we just have so much information, we wonder how we can possibly get through it all in 90 minutes for our show. We're going to be discussing things like the Roman civilization, hopefully. Hopefully we'll get to that. But in the news, we have several stories related to abortion, the death penalty, and the Second Amendment. And we always want to mention those on the air when they come up, since especially because we yesterday's topics had to do with civil disobedience, self-defense, and topics of that nature that relate so well to what we find in the news today. In addition to that, I want to take a look at an article by Walter Williams on Are We a Republic or a Democracy, if we have time to get to it. And so stay tuned to a very exciting show today, and lots of information, lots of ear candy, lots of roughage for your brain, lots of things to help you think biblically, to think as an American citizen should, with liberty on his mind and an appreciation of the Founding Fathers and the great benefits we have for living in this great nation of America. Well, we want to get right into some of the stories of the day, and before I do again, I want to just remind you of our phone number. If you need to call in and you want to ask a question or you have a comment, you can reach us at 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. You can also send your comments to questions at policyofliberty.net. That's questions at policyofliberty.net. If you're listening to this show at any time besides 7:30 to 9 o'clock in the morning Eastern Time, where it's recorded live in Greenville, South Carolina on the Tyranny Response Network, you're listening to a recording of the show, and we're glad that you are. You can only send emails if you're listening at other times besides the live show. The phone lines will not be available, obviously, when we're not live. But please do feel free, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to send us your questions and comments by email. Well, Fox News reports that Jane Roe wants high court to end abortion. Norma McCorvey in Washington, the woman whose lawsuit challenging the state of Texas's abortion ban led to the landmark Supreme Court ruling legalizing abortion nationwide, now wants the court to change its mind. McCorvey told Fox News, Hannity and Combs, that she would ask the High Court Tuesday to vacate its 1973 Roe v. Wade ruling, which remains a lightning rod for debate. It often takes several days for court officials to account for what gets filed, and so it was unclear Tuesday if McCorvey's appeal was made. And in similar related news, we have a listener write in, say, great radio program, Dr. Coben, really excited about your show and helping to finance it as God enables. News item, he says, 71,000 babies murdered in Greenville. And remember, at Grove Road, next door to the federally funded sustained murder of babies site, 10 a.m. this Saturday, January 22nd. There will be a special memorial service for all those who love God's law and and God's creative powers through procreation to honor all those little babies who have been killed by leaders of the government and media who all continue to conspire against our Lord Jesus and his law of love. Drive down the church street until it turns into 185 South. Turn off at the first exit, then Grove Road exit, and turn left going on North Street, going north on Grove Road. Abortion clinic is a few hundred feet on the left. Memorial service is next door in the parking lot. May God bless the Tyranny Response Unit, that's me, Dr. John Coben, with wisdom, finances, and influence. That's good. I do like to always be blessed with those three things. Visit M-U-S-E-O-R-L-O-S-E, museorlose.com, for beautiful scripture, calligraphy free. And that was sent to us by Roy. We appreciate the update on the memorial service and the reminder that 71,000 babies were murdered or have been murdered again in Greenville through abortion. Well, it's interesting that McCorvey in the Fox News is now penitent, and I understand she's even converted, some 30 years after she led the entire nation by her case into accepting abortion. Well, I should say the entire nation. I'm talking about the political structure, the elites in this country that seem to believe that it's okay to murder unborn children. On the Tyranny Response Network, we are not in favor of murdering unborn children. We see that people have a right to life. The most libertarian of all positions that one could possibly have. We must preserve our right not only to liberty and property, but especially to life. Because if government can take away our right to life, then government indeed has ultimate control over us. So these two stories are very important in the news today. I don't know, of course, if it's going to be a good test model, a good test case to see if McCorvey can get before the Supreme Court and actually have this case heard. And if it'll be entail having a by the time it makes it there, a new Bush appointment in place or not for the ailing Rehnquist or any others that may retire or fall off the court, who knows. But it will be interesting to see. I predict that we're not going to have much change. I don't think George Bush is going to be true to his word or actually going to have any true impact as far as the far right is concerned, whether it be libertarian or paleo-conservative. And I see that also in his other appointment of a man named Gonzalez. Remember, this Gonzalez fellow was the one in Texas who was a sitting judge that wanted to permit teenagers to go ahead and get abortions without parental consent. This is an abortion-loving attorney general nominee, and now is talking before the Senate trying to get confirmed. In Washington yesterday, in Fox News reports, that attorney general nominee Alberto Gonzalez told the Senate on Tuesday that he supports extending the expired federal assault weapons ban. This man supports the expired federal assault weapons ban. What a true conservative. This is where the Republican Party is, folks. The Republican Party is not the party of conservatives. For those of you there who are listening and are consider yourself true paleo-conservatives, and you think that Alberto Gonzalez is your man or George Bush is your man, well, here's the proof that he's not. They're in favor of extending the assault weapons ban. Gonzalez also said he wants Congress to get rid of a requirement that would eliminate part of the Patriot Act this year, despite complaints that it's too intrusive. Oh, just a little bit too intrusive. Yeah, like in violating half of our rights in the Bill of Rights one way or another. Gonzalez is not only in favor of abolishing part of the power of the Second Amendment, he also wants to replace it, in a sense, by giving us more of the Patriot Act, the thing that's intruded into our lives and required us to go through security checks that ad nauseum, including now even the idea of putting fingerprints on passports, national ID cards, and greater surveillance of individuals in the United States. This is a horrific action, and no doubt he's going to be confirmed because the New World Order and the Senate, which is full of people who support it, are going to love to hear what they're hearing from this Alberto Gonzalez fellow. Gun haters, beware. Our gun haters can be happy today, and those of us who love liberty and who love the use of our firearms and our Second Amendment rights are going to be sadder today after this guy gets in, Alberto Gonzalez. Don't be fooled, folks. He's not a true conservative. This guy is a liberal with leftist leanings in the mix, and he seems to be someone who secretly supports abortion and in public is willing to come out and even prove, as he did in Texas, the parental consent issue in favor of the pro-death side for parental notification on abortion rights, so-called abortion rights. And then we have an email come in from Brad. And right before we get to Brad's email, we want to take our first caller this morning. Welcome to Christian Worldview. This is Dr. John Coben. You're on the air.
Hey, Dr. Coben.
Hang on. We
really enjoy your show.
We had a technical snafu there. Who is speaking, please? Did you say this is Ralph?
Yeah, This is Ralph.
Welcome to the show, Ralph. Nice to hear from you this morning.
Appreciate it. Enjoy listening to when I can in the morning and also throughout the day. It's a lot of interesting stuff that you got going.
Well, this is the Tyranny Response Network. We are unparalleled in the universe, and I think we're a very special show in terms of our content and the way we produce it. So I appreciate the comment.
You're talking about Bush and his appointees, and this is one of the areas that I think frustrates me more than anything. To me, Bush is fairly transparent, but to most Christians, including, the people that are within my circle of family and friends, it just amazes me how duped they are by this guy and how, because he claims to be a Christian and says some of the right words, and I guess primarily it's probably because their standard is not truth, but their standard is whoever's standing a little to the left of them, whether it be John Kerry or Gore, that they think that he's somehow our savior. And yet you look at his appointees, the guy you're mentioning this morning, and who's the other fella, the Jewish guy who's going to be in charge of is it the Department of Justice or no, Homeland Security? Read this guy's record. These guys are just downright scary. I mean, we would be unhappy no matter who appointed them. But the fact that they're being appointed by a man who claims to be a Christian, to me, is just downright infuriating. How often do we Christians have the ability to have significant influence? It doesn't seem to be that often. And yet, we get these opportunities are not only are they squandered, but they're actually being used against us.
Great points, Ralph. I couldn't agree with you more. Bush appointees. Well, I remember when I was on my former radio broadcast before the election, I warned Christians. I said, "This guy, although you think Kerry is scary, and he was and is, George Bush is not that much better. And you're going to find out when he gets in there that not only will they not override this filibuster rule to get stuff through, they are going to end up appointing people that are going to propose legislation and policy that is antithetical to Christianity, antithetical to liberty, and all of and free markets and peace. And they've done exactly that. And this Alberto Gonzalez guy is just the latest one in a chain, I think, of scoundrels that we're going to have appointed to the Bush cabinet. So you're absolutely right. And why do you suppose, Ralph, that people are so duped, Christians and otherwise, are so gullible to believe that George Bush is their pal and their man for the hour who will come up and promote Christian values in this nation?
Yeah, well, I'm convinced it's because, their standard isn't truth. It isn't righteousness, and it isn't anything that's fixed. It's whoever's even worse, and sure, if you compare him to John Kerry, well, yeah, he certainly does look better now, doesn't he?
Well, in some things.
My argument is and continues to be, well, he's not the standard. And, just because he's even further left of Bush doesn't mean that Bush is anywhere near the center.
That's a very good point. I'm not so sure how much better Bush is than Kerry. I mean, we still have as much abortion now as we would have if Kerry were in office. We still have wars going on. We read yesterday that Bush is already targeting Iran for his next, offensive war. Other than the language that's used by these two folks, I'm not sure in terms of actions there's much different. And if we had John Kerry in office, we might even have less government because there could be gridlock on account of the Senate majority. So it's hard to say, really, that Bush is going to be that much better than John Kerry, other than appeasing Christians and others with lip service.
Yeah, and I guess we'll see when the Supreme Court becomes vacated by somebody, which I expect it'll be. But I have no hopes that he's going to appoint anybody better than his daddy did, like David Souter. Well, I got to, to his daddy's credit, he did put in Thomas, and Thomas has been, I think, a stalwart of liberty, without a doubt.
Yeah,
he had two appointees, and David Souter is as liberal as any of them.
Yeah. And you almost wonder if Thomas just snuck in there. Maybe Bush didn't realize who he was appointing, given the track record of that man as well. But you do have to give him credit where credit is due as far as appointing somebody like Thomas with his credentials and his actions.
Yeah, he's been definitely, well, he and Scalia, without those two, you don't have a whole lot there. Hmm. But
We really appreciate the call. Tell us, how long have you been listening to the program, and do you get good reception here in Greenville, and have you been telling others about the program?
Yeah. The reception is pretty good now, and I've been listening to it since, I think, about week two, and I can't get much of it in the morning, so I have to listen to it later in the day online.
Okay, well, we appreciate that. And our radio show is archived online every day around 10:30 in the morning Eastern time. For those who can't listen live, you simply go to policyofliberty.net and you click the link that says today's broadcast. There's also a link for yesterday's broadcast, and we appreciate all those who are listening to the recorded version as well. Well, thanks so much for the call, Ralph, and make sure you to call back again and visit us with your comments and questions. They're very much appreciated. We're happy to know that people are listening and supporting the show. Okay, I think we lost Ralph. Thanks, Ralph, again. Well, we want to go on to another email that we received from Brad this morning. And Brad writes in, he says, Dr. Coben, what is your opinion of the constitutional militia as described in the Second Amendment? What are your thoughts on Christian patriots forming a militia for defense purposes? Thanks, and we enjoy your show, Brad. Well, we thank you very much for that, Brad. And it's very apropos that you happen to ask this question today, since Alberto Gonzalez wants to ban all of your assault weapons. Now, remember, assault weapons, depending on the state you're in, can be something as simple as a rifle that has a 10-shot clip and a semi-automatic function, or even a 20-shot clip. So it's not real clear what an assault rifle always is. But here we see that Alberto Gonzalez is not the friend of liberty. I, as the Tyranny Response Unit, want to take the liberty to indulge myself for just a moment in reading a very important document to all Americans, or it should be an important document to all Americans, called the Bill of Rights. And you know what? This is so readily available now on the Internet. For those of you who have not read the Bill of Rights recently, I would encourage you to do so. Read the Bill of Rights. Do a search in Google and pull up the Bill of Rights. Article number 2, or the Second Amendment, says this: a well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. That is what the Second Amendment to the Constitution says: the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Well, what is my opinion on constitutional militia described in the Second Amendment, asked Brad. My opinion is that we need to have constitutional militias. I have no problem with them, and it's actually the best thing that we could possibly have here in the United States of America. Why? Because the well-regulated militia, the militia of the common people, is one of our ways that we can respond to tyranny. Not just tyranny from abroad or predators that might come and invade us, but tyranny from our own government, or our own state, as I should say, because there really is a distinction between states and governments. If you have read the Times Examiner article this week, my column is on that precise point, the difference between states and governments. But at any rate, we need the militia in order to give us some way to attack back. When the government gets so big as it is, our state is so huge, we have little hope of ever overcoming them. And the whole purpose of the Second Amendment is to give us a check on government and state power. It's not simply to preserve our right to go hunting for something. At any rate, in fact, you hear odd hunting stories. I was just driving with somebody yesterday. He told me his friend has a little farm with chickens on it that run around in the back, and he likes to get his gun out once in a while and go shoot the chickens. I don't know why you would want to go out with your gun, folks, and shoot a chicken, but those who do such things often raise the eyebrows of neighbors, and people begin to wonder, well, maybe the Second Amendment isn't all what it's cracked up to be. Well, let me tell you, folks, whether or not you want to hunt chickens or not, there is no reason for the government to take away your right to own and bear an arm, because the arms that we have, the guns that we have, are not there for hunting chickens or hunting anything else. Their primary use is for us to defend ourselves against the state, the tyrannical state, such as the one we have today. So Brad also asks, what are your thoughts on Christian patriots forming a militia for self-defense purposes? By all means, go ahead and do it. There's no problem whatsoever. We need to be as well-trained as possible. I'm not supporting necessarily any old militia movement that has a bunch of wacky people in it that go off and half-cocked and do crazy things. I'm simply saying we need to have people who are prepared in case we have to defend ourselves if the state becomes totalitarian and tyrannical as they normally do. And so, Brad, I really appreciate the question this morning. You should know that on the Tyranny Response Network and the Tyranny Response Unit, that's me, Dr. John Coben, and we do support a constitutional militia and the Second Amendment entirely, and we think it's a need is absolutely essential to the cause of liberty and to the preservation of freedom in our country. We have a couple of spots we want to run for you and take a quick break, and we'll be back in just a minute.
Warning, Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben with Integrity Group. Why is it so difficult for Christians to be good stewards of their finances? We know that God works miracles in people's lives, but he has not chosen to provide manna from above to help us meet our needs as he did with the ancient Israelites. As Christians, we should be leading the way as good stewards. Since we do not spend money on vices like non-Christians do, we should be able to save more. We want to work hard and save our money so that we can have something to give to missions and to the needy. In addition, we want to regularly set aside a portion for retirement. Christians should not have to rely on taxpayer-funded government programs for retirement. No Christian wants to become a burden to their family or church during the ever-lengthening period of old age. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. We are an independent financial planning firm. We specialize in finding creative custom solutions to meet your savings needs. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead. Make your day.
Well, we're here back on the Tyranny Response Network, hoping to go ahead and make your day the day. We are talking about many important issues with respect to the Christian faith, to liberty, to free markets this morning. We've discussed already the issue of abortion that's arisen again and the Second Amendment. We also have some many emails this morning coming in. This one from Greg, and Greg writes this. I'm sending a quote from the Congressional Record, Volume 103, page 8559, June 7, 1957. This was done in 1957 by one Israel Cohen, and it came just before the centennial celebration of the War Between the States. For those of you not familiar with that term, the War Between the States, it refers to the War of Northern Aggression that occurred in 1861 through 1865. It should also be noted that it was done just before the Civil Rights Uprise of 1960. I'm not going to say any more about it, but after reading it, think about what it says and the way our country is today. He says, and this is the quotation from the 1957 Congressional Record now, we must realize that our party's most powerful weapon is racial tensions. By propounding into the consciousness of the dark races that for centuries they have been oppressed by whites, we can mold them into the program of the Communist Party. In America, we will aim for subtle victory. While inflaming the Negro minority against whites, we will endeavor to instill in the whites a guilt complex for the exploitation of the Negro. We will aid the Negro to rise in prominence in every walk of life, in the profession and in the world of sports and entertainment. With this prestige, the Negro will be able to intermarry with the whites and being a process which will deliver America to our cause. Well, I don't know the veracity of all of this. I'm simply reading the email. But I will say this, that it makes sense to me that a Communist Party would use anything, including racial tensions, to promote its cause. And so I would not be surprised if this is actually quite accurate. And so I do appreciate you sending in the email this morning, Greg, to make us aware of it. If anyone listening has a comment about this, of course, we would welcome your comments regarding this quotation. And you can call at 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. Or send us an email to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. Well, we also have another email that came in this morning from Timothy. And we appreciate the email, Timothy. And Timothy says as follows, I have a question which I know others have puzzled over. Is it wrong to accept payment from a government program which should not exist? Some would say yes. You're encouraging the government by doing so, and the funds are stolen, etc.
Others argue that the money is better off in your hands than someone else's, that you're reclaiming some of the money stolen earlier from you, and that you are even that you are helping bankrupt the government so as to bring about the rebirth of liberty. As a related issue, if Joe steals from me, then offers me some money, which I know he obtained by theft, is there any way to distinguish between the new money he got from someone else and the old money he took from me? I can't guarantee that I'll listen for it in for the response, but you wanted some questions. Timothy. Well, thanks so much for writing in, Timothy. I do appreciate very much the comment this morning, and it is a very important question for those of us who love liberty, and especially for those of us who have moral scruples on account of our own commitment to the Christian faith. In my perspective, which is outlined in Bible and Government Public Policy from a Christian Perspective, available on the internet on the website policyofliberty.net, you can pick up a copy there in paperback or in downloadable form. I do argue precisely the first point here. Comment that you make here in your email, that it is wrong for Christians to ever take government-supported money because it does represent stolen funds. There is simply never occasion in ordinary sense when it's acceptable for Christians to receive welfare or any other government subsidy by asking for it. Now, if they throw down a road before you and it's just, you can't live in the world and go about your life without somehow using up some state benefit, like the road service or maybe a dam or something like that. Those things are unavoidable in life, but certainly we have a responsibility to not petition the state for any of its benefits by filling out an application form for a Pell Grant, for instance, and going to the university, or by filling out an application for WICA any of the aid to the families with dependent children, those kinds of benefits. The same thing is true of Social Security. It is simply wrong for us because the money that is going to be given to you, has been stolen by extortion from taxpayers. And to take money is to receive stolen funds. Now, I do realize that other people have a different opinion about this, and it's precisely what you say, but I think it's a misguided opinion. I do not think that there's any justification for stealing and bringing down the government, or as you said, just getting back something that's someone else. Getting back money that was taken from you earlier. These ends do not justify the means. First of all, we have no reason to believe the government will be brought down by us participating in their aid program. For all we know, all it will do is increase the amount of theft. They'll just go out and steal more so they can have more funds to provide to folks who apply. And second of all, you can't simply say, well, the money's in better hands, better in my hands than someone else's. This does not justify theft either. It's simply theft is wrong, and if it's theft, you cannot participate in it, and certainly you must not receive stolen funds from other people. The fact that you've been stolen from does not give you a right to go and steal from somebody else, and you're simply not getting back the money, especially when governments run deficits like we have now. All the money, theoretically, at least from an economics point of view, and you're probably familiar with this, Timothy, all the money that goes into the federal budget right now is spent immediately because they have to borrow even more to spend as much as they do. There is no getting back your money. Your money in the current period, whatever that accounting period is for the government, the fiscal period, that is stolen from you, is spent on somebody else. Someone else has your money. There is no getting it back. It's the equivalent, the logic behind this sort of sentiment is the equivalent of saying, well, I have a silver band on my finger, somebody stole it from me, then they went and sold it to somebody in India, and I don't know where it is now, but you've got a silver band that was made by the same manufacturer, it looks the same, and I'm just going to go ahead and take yours by gunpoint and have my ring back, because it's like getting my money, my ring. The fact that, that Federal Reserve notes are fungible, as we said, you can't differentiate really between one or the other, doesn't make it clean, doesn't make it your money, doesn't mean that your money can be indistinguishably returned to you simply because they all look the same. You know full well that your money has been stolen and has been spent by somebody else and it's gone, and you have no right to simply go and steal from other people because they have something that looks almost the same or is the same fungibly to get back something that you think is yours. It's not yours. Someone else was robbed and you're simply receiving stolen funds. It's an excellent question, and that's my perspective on it. If some of you have a different perspective or would like to support one of the other sides of this issue,
by all means, do give us a call at 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. You can also email the show at questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. Be sure to visit the website today, policyofliberty.net. You'll find there all sorts of interesting articles and books that I've written, as well as some quotations for liberty, links to other free market and freedom-loving sources for liberty, homeschooling, also creationism and pro-life. And by all means, take a look at the front page, which has recordings of the Liberty Minutes program that we broadcast on this station, the Tyranny Response Network, and will be broadcast elsewhere as time goes along. Find out some interesting news there, some interesting pieces for our thought-provoking pieces, so that you can start your day and continue your day thinking about truth, liberty, and some issues of tremendous importance. Well, we have many more things to cover today, but we're coming up right now on our first break. We'd like to remind you that you're listening to the Tyranny Response Network in Greenville. If you're listening at any other time between 7:30 in the morning and 9:00, you're listening to a recorded show, and we're glad that you're doing so. And if you have comments at those times outside of the regular airing times, the live times, please send your questions by email to questions@policyofliberty.net. The phone lines will not be working during that period of time. We'll be back in a minute. This is Dr. John Coben on the Tyranny Response Network with Christian Worldview.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead, make your day.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a Ph.D. degree in public policy, M.A. degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of 6 homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
Welcome back. This is the Tyranny Response Network. You're listening to Dr. John Coben, your Tyranny Response Unit on TRN, and this is Christian Worldview. We've noted a couple times that on the website, on the front page, there are some deep questions for folks who want to think about Christian issues or issues related to public policy, the Christian's relation to the state, the Christian's view, or the Christian or biblical view of the state, as well as some other pointed questions. And if you click on that link on the front page of policyofliberty.net, you'll come to this document that has 17 questions which I've prepared, and we encourage you to read off the air, think about, and even email a comment in about or a question about or a response to. Question 11 on that list is the following. Since we've been talking about abortion earlier, is it important for American Christians to be informed and then vote, or to get involved with politics or sit on a jury, organize First Amendment protests? How does Proverbs 24:11-12 relate to abortion clinic protesting and Operation Rescue? We're not going to cover this whole question today by any means, but I wanted to read the scripture there Proverbs 24:11-12 says, "Deliver those who are drawn toward death, and hold back those stumbling to the slaughter. If you say, 'Surely we did not know this,' does not he who weighs the hearts consider it? He who keeps your soul, does he not know it? And will he not render to each man according to his deeds?" Well, this is a passage of Scripture that is used by those who are involved with Operation Rescue and others in America who are against abortion and who are frequently involved in protest movements, as Roy was this morning in his holding of the memorial service next to the abortuary here in Greenville. And we appreciate those efforts, but what does this passage have to do with abortion? I think it has a lot to do with abortion, but other people might disagree. Is this telling us, is the Scripture telling us that we have an obligation to stand up for those that are, as it says here, drawn towards death and stumbling to the slaughter? Well, the innocent, those who are defenseless in the womb, certainly need our support and our help, and those of us who love life and love liberty have to do all that we can to mitigate the great evil that is inflicted and the great slaughter that is inflicted in the United States of America today on account of these rulings towards abortion. Well, think about this particular question and whether or not it's appropriate and right for Christians to protest in front of abortion clinics and be part of things like Operation Rescue. The Tyranny Response Unit, that's me, Dr. John Coben, does think that it's okay for Christians to be involved in these sorts of movements, and in fact, it's not okay. Only okay, they should be involved in one way or another in the fight against abortion. Well, we have some other very important emails that came in this morning, very interesting ones. Today is a special day because on Monday there was a holiday really glorifying Martin Luther King Jr., who was a civil rights activist that apparently did some good things to alleviate the plight of the Negro or the black in the United States, but was also a man who was rather speckled in his character, one who didn't have too many scruples. The man was a plagiarist. As far as we can tell, he received his doctorate by simply lying and copying information that was not his and attributing the work to himself. And he was also tightly aligned with the Communist Party. In some of his writings, many have pointed out the strong link and the nexus between Martin Luther King and the Marxists or the Communists in the United States. He was also very immoral in his own lifestyle, an adulterer and a womanizer, and that man we have a holiday for. On the other hand, we should have a holiday for the man whose birthday it is today instead. Did you all know that today is Robert E. Lee's birthday, the famous general in the Confederate Army in the Army of Northern Virginia during the war between the states or the War of Northern Aggression? General Robert E. Lee, I think, is one of the greatest figures in American history and perhaps one of the best generals of all time. And Greg emailed me a message from Chuck Baldwin, who was the vice presidential candidate for the Constitution Party, with such an excellent article or short piece that I thought I'd read it to you now in memory of Robert E. Lee and trying to bring in mind this week somebody who really deserves to be revered as someone who is a great American, a lover of peace and liberty, and who is truly a Christian. Chuck writes the following. "January is often referred to as General's Month. No less than four famous Confederate generals claim January as their birth month. James Longstreet, January 8, 1821. Robert E. Lee, January 19, 1807. Thomas Jonathan Jackson, that's Stonewall Jackson, January 21, 1824. And George Pickett, January 28, 1825. Two of these men, Lee and Jackson, are especially noteworthy. Without question, Robert E. Lee and Stonewall Jackson were two of the greatest military leaders of all time. Even more, the Lee and Jackson tandem is regarded by many military historians as perhaps having formed the greatest battlefield duo in the history of warfare. If Jackson had survived the Battle of Chancellorsville, it is very possible that the South would have prevailed at Gettysburg and perhaps would have even won the war between the states. While the strategies and circumstances of the War of Northern Aggression can and will be debated by professionals and laymen alike, one fact is undeniable. Robert E. Lee and Thomas Jonathan Jackson were two of the finest Christian gentlemen this country has ever produced. Both their character and their conduct are beyond reproach. Unlike his northern counterpart, Ulysses S. Grant, General Lee never sanctioned or condoned slavery. Upon inheriting slaves from his deceased father-in-law, Lee immediately freed them. As for General Jackson, it has never been demonstrated that he ever had any slaves to free. In addition, unlike Abraham Lincoln and Ulysses S. Grant, neither Lee nor Jackson ever spoke disparagingly of the black race. As those who are familiar with history know, General Grant and his wife held personal slaves before the war, during the war between the states. Even Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation did not free them, and they were not free until the 13th Amendment was passed after the conclusion of the war. Grant's excuse for freeing his slaves was that good help is hard to come by these days. Grant's excuse for not freeing his slaves was that good help is so hard to come by these days. Of course, Lincoln's views on slavery and the black race are widely known, at least by those familiar with history. In fact, if Lincoln were alive today, he would no doubt be identified as a white supremacist. For example, in an 1858 debate, Lincoln said, "I will say then that I am not, nor have I ever been in favor of bringing about in any way the social and political equality of the white and black races, that I am not nor ever have been in favor of making voters or jurors of Negroes, nor qualifying them to vote or hold office, nor to intermarry with white people. And I will say in addition that there is a physical difference between the white and black races which I believe will forever forbid the two races living together on terms of social and political equality. And inasmuch as they cannot so live, while they do remain together, there must be the position of superior and inferior. I, as much as any other man, am in favor of having the superior position assigned to the white race." Lincoln routinely made such comments. This is the man revered for freeing the slaves and helping bring about rights for black people. Lincoln, folks, is not your friends. And, of course, this is the Tyranny Response Unit interjecting in the middle of Chuck Baldwin's fine comments. Chuck continues to write here, Chuck Baldwin, "Contrast the sentiments of Lincoln and Grant to those of Robert E. Lee and Thomas Stonewall Jackson. For example, it is well established that Jackson regularly conducted a Sunday school class for black children. This was a ministry he took very seriously. As a result, he was dearly loved and appreciated by the children he taught. Furthermore, both Jackson and Lee emphatically supported the abolition of slavery. In fact, Lee called slavery a moral and political evil. He also said the best men of the South opposed it and welcomed its demise. Jackson said he wished to see the shackles struck from every slave." To think that Lee and Jackson and the vast majority of Confederate soldiers would fight and die to preserve an institution they considered evil and abhorrent is the height of absurdity. It is equally repugnant to impugn and denigrate the memory of these remarkable Christian gentlemen. Instead of allowing a secular, humanist, politically correct culture to sully the memory of Robert E. Lee and Thomas J. Jackson and their compatriots, all Americans should hold them in a place of highest honor and respect. Anything less is a disservice to history and a disgrace to the principles of truth and integrity. Chuck Baldwin. Well, Chuck, you just have a real gift for writing and a knack for pointing out the most important pieces of history and bringing to our minds the truth. Because we are so inundated with the lies and frauds, people sometimes wonder and ask, "Why, Dr. Coben, do you not have a television in your home?" Well, there is a lot of immorality on television, which I don't particularly care for, obviously. But the main reason I don't want to have it in the home is it's, number one, a waste of time, and number two, I don't want to be preached to with falsehood by commercials or by the state or by the talking heads of the media. I'd rather get my own internet news or sources of news and information outside of the television, because it's just appalling what kind of garbage and revisionist history goes through the airwaves of the television. Of course, on the Tyranny Response Network, that's here, right here, you are tuned in to hear the truth about matters, and you're not going to be brainwashed, or you're not going to be fed a pack of lies like you'll get in the mainstream media. That's the reason we have the Tyranny Response Network. I imagine most other places, including Fox News, ABC, CBS, and so forth, are not going to be reading Chuck Baldwin letters as we will on the Tyranny Response Network, and we really appreciate Chuck's work. By the way, my fourth son Matthew's middle name is Stonewall, and that might give you some inclination about where I stand on the Confederacy issue, the war between the states, or the war of northern aggression. and my sentiments being from the true South in Southern California and lie. That's right. Southern California is in the true South. The latitude is south. Just take a look at your map. You'll find out that it's correct. And there are many of us in Southern California who even know more about the great cause of the South and Southern history than those who live here in South Carolina, where it all began. We also have another article sent in by Greg, again, by Wayne Carlson, and he wrote something about the Magnificent Lee. And I'm only going to, this is a very long article, but he's trying to laud Lee's life, as he should, for being a great, great Christian, as well as a great general. And I will just read a couple of portions from this particular article. He says, earlier generations were all aware of Lee's legacy before the interjection of political correctness and the subsequent indoctrination of the young destroyed any legitimate claims of parental or community control over what is taught to their children. They knew, as Lee's biographer Douglas Southwell Freeman would say, that no man could study the character of Robert E. Lee without benefit to their manhood. Can the same be said of our current crop of heroes? The Lee legacy that we are in such desperate need of today epitomized those old Southern values that too many of us have forgotten or have cast aside. These values include reverence, courage, humility, self-sacrifice, forbearance, honesty, courtesy, gentility, and kinship. I'd like to believe that these old values can be cultivated among our people, but it begins with those of us that have not lost an appreciation for what really matters in life and what truly constitutes a civilized Christian people. I can think of no better example than Lee outside of our Lord and Savior to begin the rebuilding process. And we do appreciate that commentary as well. We'd like to revere and remember Robert E. Lee today on his birthday as one of the greatest Christian Americans and greatest patriots, and not only that, but one of the greatest generals of all time. And these are the people we ought to hold up, people like Robert E. Lee and Stonewall Jackson, as our heroes, not only of the faith, but heroes of our great nation. And we ought to put in their true place where they belong, closer to the gates of hell, people like Abraham Lincoln, Ulysses S. Grant, and not to mention the more current administrations, but as well, you know, Clinton and Bush and so forth, but also the folks who have done all that they can to bring down America and its great, great institutions of liberty that people and the founding of our country fought and died for, and were so valiant in achieving. So easy to squander such a great, great benefit that we have of living in the United States of America, because America is truly the greatest anomaly in the history of the world as far as governments go, as far as we know. But it's also a great a privilege that God has granted to us to be able to live in this nation. Well, we have more stories coming up. We want to talk about the death penalty a little bit, and as well as Walter Williams' column and something about the Roman civilization and a continuation from yesterday. Before we do that, we're going to take a quick break. This is Dr. John Coben on the Tyranny Response Network with Christian Worldview.
You're listening to TRN. Warning, Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
Disinfecting the modern mainstream media, Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
And this is Dr. John Coben, your Tyranny Response Unit, back on the air, live here in Greenville, South Carolina. Just a couple of other stories related to deep Christian themes again. We find the double murderer Beardsley executed in California this morning. San Quentin, California, prison officials executed three-time murderer early Wednesday, making him the 11th inmate to be put to death since capital punishment was reinstated in 1977. Donald Beardsley, 61, was executed by injection for killing two women in 1981, that's 23 years ago, while on parole for a third slaying. Officials said Beardsley did not make a final statement. The execution came only hours after Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, the Terminator, who has now terminated the 50-caliber rifle in California, by the way, rejected a clemency petition seeking to commute the death sentence to life without parole. The Supreme Court rejected two last-minute appeals. Well, there also is another article in Fox News that in Washington, the Supreme Court agreed Friday to hear the appeal of a Mexican national on death row in Texas, stepping into an international debate over the legal rights of foreigners in capital punishment cases. The World Court, why do we care about the World Court, by the way? But anyway, the World Court at The Hague ruled earlier this year that the United States violated the rights of 51 of Mexicans on death row, including Jose Medellin, or Medellin, whose appeal will be heard at the Supreme Court next spring. The World Court, which is the United Nations' highest judiciary, had determined that American officials should give the inmates meaningful review of the convictions and sentences now, on grounds that the U.S. government failed to inform their home countries of their arrests and trials. The World Court is charged with resolving disputes between nations, but cannot force the United States to follow its decisions, at least not yet, is my interjection. Well, the death penalty is a very big issue, and we'd appreciate some of your questions and comments about it. In general, those who are libertarians and conservatives should not have much problem with a death penalty, at least in theory, in principle, because the death penalty is, after all, part of self-defense in a civilized society. We could make a rationalization and a justification for the death penalty and simply say, well, look, this guy Beardsley deserves to die, and really we can ignore this World Court, and the Mexican person on death row deserves to die, because not only does Genesis 9:6 tell us that if we shed man's blood, by man's blood we should be shed, and this is if there is any proper role for the state, it has to be self-defense, and part of self-defense is bringing criminals to justice. Otherwise, we just have a vigilante crew that runs around with guns in the Wild West of variety and just shoots up people. And we have lynch mobs and so forth. So a civilized society needs a death penalty. Well, all of this in principle, biblically, philosophically, makes a lot of sense that we could actually put people to death, except for one thing, and this is where the rub really comes. We have the evil state, which Nock and others have called a professional criminal class, in charge of deciding who gets executed through its court system, through the policing function, and so on and so forth. And therefore, we have a number of corruption, public choice, and what we call knowledge problems in economic circles associated with the death penalty. That, in other words, folks, that means you might end up having innocent people being put to death by the state. Now, as much as I would, in principle, be in favor of a death penalty, I have to say this. If there are 100 people on death row in California, and just one of them is innocent and has been put there because of some corrupt, evil state official, or because the state has made some egregious error in convicting him on some lame circumstantial evidence or whatever else, and he's really, truly innocent, won't be heard, won't be believed, I would rather not execute the other 99 than execute the 99 and kill the one innocent man. It's just unjust and wrong to kill innocent people, especially by use of something like the evil state. And now, I have no reason to believe that the state will do anything good. I have no experience where the state really does good things, in, at least generally. Of course, you can always point to little isolated events, but it's about the equivalent of saying, well, look at the Mormon Church or look at the Greek Orthodox Church. See, it does a few good things here and there, and therefore the whole thing must be good. No, you can't say that. Just because an institution is doing a little bit of good doesn't mean the whole thing is fine and dandy. The same thing may be true with the federal state we have in the United States. Or even the state governments of each individual state. Just because they might occasionally do a good thing does not mean or doesn't whitewash everything they do, and it doesn't mean that everything else they do must be good. Not only do they make mistakes, we can say that there can be intentional maliciousness, intentional malignancy on the part of the state that leads to people being convicted and put on death row. And because of that, because I have no confidence in the state and I have no reason to believe that they will actually fulfill their duty to actually defend us from real criminals, murderers, so forth, that should and do deserve to die, at least in by God's standard, I don't want to have necessarily a death penalty administered by the state. Well, you say, well, Dr. Coben, how in the world can you have a death penalty if it's not administered by the state? Well, many people have written about this, especially Bruce Benson comes to mind down in Florida. In the early 1990s, he wrote a book called The Enterprise of Law, Justice Without the State. And he has a sequel to that book, and I've forgotten the name of it all of a sudden. But at any rate, if you look up Dr. Bruce Benson on Amazon.com, you'll find a couple of his works. There are means by which we can, without the use of a state, execute criminals, even if we just have simple governance. Remember during the time of Israel's early history, in the Old Testament, during the book of Judges, there were vast periods of time, many, many decades, in which Israel had a political anarchy. Not that they had chaos, but that they had no formalized state, no government, no king. And yet they still were able to have law, uphold law, and punish criminals and so forth. And so obviously it is possible to have justice without a state. Remember, government is not the same as a state. What our founders envisioned was a government, someone to help us collectively defend against predators. What we have now, what most governments in an equilibrating fashion do, is turn into states, and states are where we have the difficulty. So if we ever get back to the point of having a constitutionally limited government that is a principled institution, yes, indeed, it may be okay to have a death penalty, and that could well be the case. Under our current circumstances, with a state prone to corruption, prone to its economic perverse incentives, public choice, what we call public choice and knowledge problems in the economic circles, I have grave doubts about using a death penalty at the hand of a state. The next thing that's going to happen is those who are involved with hate speech and hate crimes will be put to death because of its own internal injustice and corruption. If you have a comment about my view, or you would like to add to it, or question it, debate it, please give us a call here at the Tyranny Response Network at 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. You can also send your questions or comments by email to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. Well, we're coming up now on the towards the end of this particular segment, so coming up to a break here, and we'll be back in just another minute or two on the Tyranny Response Network. This is Dr. John Coben with Christian Worldview.
You're listening to TRN. Tired of superficial and dull talk radio? Try some ear candy for thinking people. Listen to Liberty Minute with Dr. John Coben.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben with Integrity Group. Let's consider Christian stewardship in terms of financial planning. Saving, eliminating debt, lessening the burdens that can accompany a serious illness or accident. One of the most important reasons that we acquire life, disability, and long-term care insurance is because we want to love our neighbors as ourselves. After all, what kind of testimony do we give if we actually plan to rely on the charity of others? If we love others, especially our church and family members, we should do careful financial planning. Some Christians have 401k plans and need to be rolled over into a better investment alternative. Still others need to protect their wives and children by purchasing some inexpensive life or health insurance. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service. As an independent financial planning firm with a wide range of products, we're here to help you become a better financial steward. Find out about our many services at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a Ph.D. degree in public policy, M.A. degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
So true, so true. Everything the announcer just said is absolutely right. The Tyranny Response Unit, that's me, Dr. John Coben, your stalwart, your person who stands in the gap, who is against tyranny, for freedom, for liberty, for life, against abortion, and for peace. We are not in favor of the phony wars, whether it be the drug war, the terror war, the war in Iraq, or any of these phony wars that are started by our modern politicians to promote their own ends and to promote the benefits of their own special interests. Ever ask George Bush why he's so worried about Iran or Iraq, or Iraq in the past, obviously, and now maybe Iran, when he has not been so interested about the Sudan? Do you have any idea how many people have been murdered in the Sudan? How many civil rights and human rights have been violated in the Sudan? And yet you hear mention of it in the media, and yet George W. Bush, our fearless leader in the fight against repression and tyranny, doesn't seem to be too concerned about it, or at least he's not concerned enough to invade that country. Maybe it's just that there's not enough oil in the Sudan, or maybe there's some other reason. If you have a comment about that, I'd like to know. If you're more informed than I am, please, by all means, give us a call at 864-201-6955. If you know something about the reason Bush is not in the Sudan, but he is in Iraq and now apparently going to be heading to Iran. Well, and another news story this morning, just to follow up on a previous show, Georgia School Board is to appeal the evolution ruling. Marietta, Georgia, members of a suburban district school board plan to challenge a federal judge order to remove stickers in science textbooks that call evolution, quote, a theory and not a fact, unquote. In a 5-2 vote, the Cobb County School Board decided to appeal last week's ruling. Board members said U.S. District Judge Clarence Cooper's order to remove the stickers immediately amounts to unnecessary judicial intrusion into local control of schools, according to a statement. Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens. It's interesting that this school board is dominated by people who are not evolutionists, not Darwinians, and for good reason, because Darwinism is just absolute junk science, has nothing to do with reality, and it's just a religious outcropping of the secular humanists and those who don't believe in God. But having said that, my comment as before, and I'll make it again, is why would we ever expect anything different out of a government school? The so-called public school system is nothing more than a platform for secular humanists, Darwinists, abortionists, homosexuals, and other people who oppose liberty and oppose our values to make speeches and to indoctrinate children. Why in the world would we expect that they would allow creationism to be upheld in at the same status as evolution, or to put stickers on the textbook minimizing the true foundations and principles of their religious form, which is found in Darwinism? It's just ludicrous to me to believe you can ever ultimately transform the public, so-called public school. The government school is there doing exactly what it was designed to do, to indoctrinate people, to turn them away from the faith, to turn them into little statist nationalists that serve the federal government, the state government in which they live, not only in terms of supporting the military, but in paying taxes for all of the welfare state programs that we found today. There's just no way in my mind this is actually going to come to anything ultimately, but we will with very great interest follow the story about the stickers about Darwinism on textbooks. Well, we also have one more thing I'd like to get to, because it relates so well to what we've been talking about on the show today. And we just have, you know, in this last segment, a couple of things we want to get to, if possible, on Christian Worldview. And one is Dr. Walter Williams' column. Now, many of you realize and know that I studied under Dr. Walter Williams and was very proud to do so and have that opportunity to do so at George Mason University in the 1990s. Dr. Walter Williams is often criticized by people of his own race as being an Oreo, because they say he's black on the outside and white on the inside. The truth of the matter is that sort of caricature is really, really sad and tragic, because Walter Williams is a thinking man. It doesn't matter what color the guy's skin is. What matters is he thinks, and he realizes that what's going on today in the United States is an aberration of what the founders envisioned for our country. Walter Williams is a champion of the entire Bill of Rights, the Constitution, and the protections that it guarantees us as Americans. He's also in favor of free markets and against socialism. He is a man who stands in the gap against all of those who would try to thrust upon us any kind of totalitarian or Marxian or socialist system in the United States. And if you haven't read Walter's column, you really need to get a copy of the Times Examiner, 44 Pine Knoll Road. The Times Examiner, 44 Pine Knoll Road, and I believe the website is thetimesexaminer.com, if I'm not mistaken, all written together, thetimesexaminer.com. Check it out. The subscription price here in the upstate or sent anywhere in the United States is only $20 a year, and it's a worthwhile paper to get every week in your mailbox, because the columns in it are tremendous. Of course, Thomas Sowell is also in there, who was the one who instructed Walter Williams, and then I'm in there as well on a weekly basis, so I like to think that we have a bit of a trio of a family, although the skin color is a little different, between Thomas Sowell, Walter Williams, and I in the Times Examiner each week. Now, you will find neocons like Tony Beam and others in here who are writing from a more leftist perspective, just to warn you, but you can do as you wish with those articles. You will find the truth meted out, through several of the other writers in the Times Examiner. Some very good other writers we could go through as well. But we won't take the time right now. Let me jump ahead and talk about what Walter's article in this just the past week Times Examiner said, and it's a nationally syndicated column, so it probably appears elsewhere. Are we a republic or democracy? Walter writes. He says, "We often hear the claim that our nation is a democracy. That wasn't the vision of the founders. They saw democracy as another form of tyranny. If we become a democracy, I guarantee you that the founders would be deeply disappointed by our betrayal of their vision. The founders intended and laid out their ground rules for our nation to be a republic." The word democracy appears nowhere in the Declaration of Independence or the Constitution, two most fundamental documents of our nation. Instead of democracy, the Constitution's Article 4, Section 4, guarantees to every state in this union a republican form of government. Moreover, let's ask ourselves, does our Pledge of Allegiance to the flag say, to the democracy for which it stands, or does it say, to the republic for which it stands? Or do we sing the battle hymn of the democracy, or the battle hymn of the republic? Actually, some of us don't sing the battle hymn of the republic at all, but be that as it may. So what's the difference between republican and democratic forms of government? John Adams captured the essence of the difference when he said, "You have rights antecedent to all earthly governments, rights that cannot be repealed or restrained by human laws, rights derived from a great legislator of the universe. Nothing in our Constitution suggests that government is a grantor of rights. Instead, government is a protector of rights. In recognition that it's Congress that poses the greatest threat to our liberties, the framers use negative phrases against Congress throughout the Constitution, such as shall not abridge, infringe, deny, disparage, and deny, and shall not be violated, nor be denied. In a republican form of government, there is rule of law. All citizens, including government officials, are accountable to the same laws. Government power is limited and decentralized through a system of checks and balances. Government intervenes in civil society to protect its citizens against force and fraud, but it does not intervene in the causes of peaceable, voluntary exchange." Contrast the framers' vision of a republic with that of a democracy. In a democracy, the majority rules either directly or through its elected representatives. In a monarchy, the law is whatever the government determines it to be. Laws do not represent reason. They represent power. They restrain upon the individual instead of government. Unlike that envisioned under the republican form of government, rights are seen as privileges and permissions that are granted by government and then can be rescinded by government. Well, I won't read the rest of the article, although it's excellent. Almost everything that Walter Williams writes is excellent. If you aren't a regular reader of that eye candy, I would encourage you to do so. Walter is absolutely right on two points, as you've heard before here on the Tyranny Response Network. First of all, that government is not the grantor of our rights to life, liberty, and property. As John Adams said in the quotation that Walter wrote, we receive our rights to life, liberty, and property, or the pursuit of happiness, antecedent to the state, before the state arrives, before the government even arrives. And so the reason we create a limited government is to protect those as a collective entity, to protect those rights that we already have. The totalitarian vision, the vision that the government school seems to force upon people or thrust upon people, the vision of Marxists, socialists, leftists everywhere, and those who promote abortion rights, is that governments or some other social order, namely the state, gives us our rights. The privileges that we have are really just euphemistically called rights, that we only have them at the whim and will of the state which overshadows us and lives over us. So Walter is precisely right in pointing this out. The second thing is that the idea of democracy was repugnant to the United States, the founders of the American Republic. We did not have a democracy here. We have a republic, and Walter points out this great and important distinction. Government simply, or the state simply, was not to be our overlord in this country, as it had been and has been and continues to be in so many other places, whether it be under a monarchy or any other totalitarian or communist or socialistic form in Europe, Asia or elsewhere. So we really appreciate Walter's column this morning. If you have a comment about Walter and his distinction between republic and democracy, or where we get our rights from, whether they're from God, antecedent to the state, or the idea that government grants rights, we'd love to hear from you on the Tyranny Response Network. You can reach us at 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. Or send your email. Send us your questions by email and your comments by email to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben on the Tyranny Response Network. We're coming up to a quick break. We'll be back in a second.
You're listening to TRN. The Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben with Integrity Group. Let's consider Christian stewardship in terms of financial planning. Saving, eliminating debt, lessening the burdens that can accompany a serious illness or accident. One of the most important reasons that we acquire life, disability, and long-term care insurance is because we want to love our neighbors as ourselves. After all, what kind of testimony do we give if we actually plan to rely on the charity of others? If we love others, especially our church and family members, we should do careful financial planning. Some Christians have 401k plans that need to be rolled over into a better investment alternative. Still others need to protect their wives and children by purchasing some inexpensive life or health insurance. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service. As an independent financial planning firm with a wide range of products, we're here to help you become a better financial steward. Find out about our many services at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
Wow, what a day today. We've talked about the Second Amendment. We've talked about abortion. We've talked about the death penalty. We've talked about the difference between republics and democracies. We've talked about our rights of life, liberty, and property, and whether they are antecedent to the state, which they are, or whether they're, as some people wrongly claim, they are provisions and privileges doled out by states. Well, a lot that's been covered today because they're in the headlines, and we wanted to be able to do that, but I want to come back to one thing that we were talking about on yesterday's show, where we really got fairly deep into some Christian doctrine, as well as to think about liberty more seriously, perhaps, and what the Bible might be teaching about liberty and rebellion to the state or disobedience to the state. And I brought up yesterday an article that's one of my all-time favorites from the Trinity Review. The Trinity Review it may be found on the Internet at the TrinityFoundation.org website. It's called www.TrinityFoundation.org website. The Trinity Review is a monthly publication of this institution, and it's run by a professor, Dr. John W. Robbins. Some people claim that Dr. Robbins is a little bit caustic or bombastic, but the fact of the matter is that in spite of those things that they may come through it from time to time in some people's minds, he never appears that way to me, the Tyranny Response student, personally that way, but other people might perceive him as being such. There still is a wealth of information and truth in what he writes and what people who write for the Trinity Review say, that I would encourage you to subscribe for free to the Trinity Review. Go to the www.trinityfoundation.org website and sign up for either an emailed version or a print version. Well, Dr. Robbins, in an archived copy of the Trinity Review from December 2002, January, February, March 2003, wrote a series of articles called Christ and Civilization, in which he talked about, first of all, the world in which Christ entered. And I read yesterday on the air for your listening pleasure what the world was like and under the Roman Empire when Jesus and the apostles lived. Basically, John Robbins would like to disabuse us of any notions about how the Pax Romana, the Roman peace that came through the military building of their road system, was any kind of indication of a peaceful, prosperous, and wonderful life with law and justice and philosophy reigning, deep thinking reigning. As a matter of fact, we find just the opposite in the Roman world, that classical religion dominated the era. And it was not there was no freedom of religion whatsoever. And not only that, but there was vast amount of immorality, corruption, egregious activities activities done by the state to afflict the citizens and cause a great deal of tyranny. The Roman government is not something that should be lauded. It should not be something that is held up by Christians as being an example of order and justice in the world. Now, why would you might be asking, you know, especially if you didn't hear the show yesterday, why are we worried about what the Roman civilization was like? Well, there's a very important reason why. This is Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, and because of that, we are trying to develop not just a view in general for liberty, which many people are very interested in listening to, non-Christians and Christians alike, but also why in the world why Christians should consider disobedience or not consider disobedience to the civil government, when they should, if they should at all, and how we justify our actions in accordance to the scriptures. I mean, actually, Christians say that they are trying to live according to what God's Word says. Well, God's Word in Romans chapter 13 and 1 Peter chapter 2 makes some very strong statements about the state, as well as elsewhere in the Scriptures, Titus chapter 3 verses 1 and 2, for instance. And we need to take seriously what it says and with respect to our role of obeying or interacting with the civil government. Because of that, those passages and what they have to say, we need to know something about the cultural context and the historical setting in which they were written. Obviously, we can't divorce the comments from anything in the Scriptures from the historical and cultural context. For instance, the Bible, as I mentioned yesterday, says we need to greet one another with a holy kiss. Well, to do so in American society might mean something entirely different if two men were kissing each other than if we were living in the Roman Empire in Greece or Rome or some other province of the Roman Empire. And so everything needs to be interpreted and understood in light of its cultural context, including the passages with respect to the state and Paul's writing about the civil government and its use. So, therefore, it's important for us, especially as Christians, to understand a little bit about the Roman civilization, because Paul and Peter wrote their famous passages under the domineering influence of Nero, the Caesar who was cruel, wicked, a breaker of all Ten Commandments, as far as we can tell, and a man who was dedicated to his own glory, and certainly not the glory of God, and promoting wickedness in the empire. Well, I'm going to read a couple of passages now, and we'll do this for as much as possible today's show, and then we'll continue on tomorrow's show, because this is such an important topic on Christian worldview. John Robbins writes that about classical religion the following. He says, "Greece and Rome were not secular states. They were drenched in religion. There was then no significant distinction between sacred and secular. That was a later Christian idea. On Paul's arrival to Athens, he found a city given over to idols, Acts 17:6. Dreams, omens, ghosts, apparitions, and the evil eye were both feared as sources of harm and sought as sources of guidance. Astrology was a science and a part of high culture, enjoying the respect psychiatry does today. Idols, images, and shrines were ubiquitous." That means everywhere. Omnipresent. "Animal sacrifice was a regular part of religious worship, and festivals and holidays, by one account, 109 days each year were holidays in Rome, were frequent. Temple prostitution was commonplace. The name of the Greek city of Corinth, the center of religious devotion, became synonymous with sexual immorality. To Corinthianize was to engage in the most perverted and debauched sexual practices. In the pagan culture of Rome, homosexuality was commonplace and accepted." "The Romans worshipped 12 major gods and goddesses and thousands of lesser gods which had arisen from the animism of early Rome. There were gods for war, fertility, love, harvest, travel, doors, ad infinitum. Each god and goddess had his or her own sphere of influence, his or her department, and the devout Roman did not worship one god to the exclusion of others, but worshipped all as circumstances demanded." So one thing we know about the Roman civilization is that it was not a Christian civilization, and nobody really, I think, denies that fact. But what people often believe is that, well, because you had so many gods, you actually had a freedom of religion much akin to our First Amendment guarantees. Nothing could be further from the truth. The Roman civilization wanted paganism, and paganism was polytheistic, but only paganism. The idea that Paul could come in there and talk about there being only one true God was heresy to them and was punishable by death. It was not tolerated to have anything but a pagan idea or pagan philosophy or a pagan religion in your heart in those days. Robbins continues, because of the variety of gods in Rome, some historians have mistakenly concluded that Rome enjoyed religious liberty. But the command of the 12 tables around 450 BC, as well as the persecution of religious dissenters, makes it clear that religious liberty was not a feature of Roman society. Let no one have gods on his own, neither new ones nor strange ones, but only those instituted by the state. Only those instituted by the state? Does that sound like freedom of religion to you? It was not freedom of religion. There was not freedom of religion in the Roman Empire. The state decided who was God and what would be qualified as a god and what religion would reign supreme, and it was paganism, the forerunner of secular humanism. In another place, Robbins says, those who deny that there were or had been Christians and called upon the gods in the usual formula, reciting the words after me, those who offered incense and wine before your, the emperor's image, which I had given orders to be brought forward for this purpose, together with the statues of the deities, all such I considered should be discharged, especially as they cursed the name of Christ, which it is said those who are really Christians cannot be induced to do. So in other words, the state would line up people and say, look, let's see you curse the name of Christ. And if you do that, and then all is well, you can save your life and not die the death that they were going to appoint for them as Christians. But they said, we don't expect this to happen because Christians cannot be induced to do this. They will be faithful to death, even as Christ required them to be. This was what Roman civilization was like, folks. It was not a civilization of peace and justice and freedom of religion, especially. On tomorrow's show, we're going to talk more about the Roman civilization a bit. We're going to talk about their liking of warfare, their loving of slavery, and of not of socialism, but of totalitarian control over the economy. There was no welfare state in Rome like we have today, not even anything of real semblance to it, other than minor corn distributions that you might find on ad hoc or special occasions. But certainly we can say we need to disabuse ourselves of the idea that Paul and Peter were writing in a circumstances or in a situation under the empire or an environment where freedom of religion was tolerated and encouraged. As a matter of fact, if you were a Christian and believed in a God that was not appointed by the state, then you were subject to martyrdom, to being killed. Some of you may well know that the Christians became so infesting of the Roman Empire that the Roman government eventually, or the Roman state, eventually got very upset about this. They declared all-out war, but at some point succumbed to the fact that, look, the Christians are here to stay. No matter how many times we try to kill them, they just keep coming back in greater numbers. We need to somehow synthesize our state paganism with the Christian religion that is propounded by those who are now in the catacombs. And under Constantine the Great, who many of us doubt might really have been truly a Christian, we have the great synthesis of paganism and Christianity, as Christianity is adopted as a state religion in Rome, and we ended up getting what we become the Roman Catholic Church, who, as far as I'm concerned, as the Tyranny Response Unit, Dr. John Coben, is a false religion, is a heretical religion, and the reason for the Reformation still stands in great importance in not only reforming but eliminating the validity of this Roman Catholic institution as a non-Christian false religion mixed with paganism as a result of this Roman synthesis under Constantine. Well, we've come to the time, again, our show has to end for the day. We're so happy that you've been able to join us on the Tyranny Response Network here in Greenville, South Carolina. If you've been listening to the show at any other time than 7:30 to 9 in the morning, it's a recorded broadcast, and we welcome your comments and questions by email to questions@policyofliberty.net if you're listening at another time or even during the show, as I have my laptop ready, and to receive any emails that you might send. We look forward to another show tomorrow morning, and we welcome you back at that time on the Tyranny Response Network, where we'll be again dispelling the myths and revisionist history that's promoted by the current mainstream secular humanists in the media, in the government schools, and in politics. So if you want to hear to the truth and an understanding of a Christian worldview that is proper and correct, stay tuned or tune in again tomorrow morning at 7:30 for Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We'll see you then.
You've been listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben on TRN. Join us again tomorrow morning right here at 97.7 FM on the Tyranny Response Network for Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
Tired of superficial and dull talk radio? Try some ear candy for thinking people. Listen to Liberty Minute with Dr. John Coben.
This recording was made in 1971 near Los Angeles, California. As we begin the program, Dr. Crane is being introduced to the audience.
We are delighted to have Dr. Stuart Crane.